Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to IndiGo's fourth quarter and fiscal year 2017 financial results conference call. My name is Zaid, and I'll be your coordinator. At this time, the participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow today's management discussion. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your moderator, Mr. Ankur Goel, Director of Treasury and Investor Relations for IndiGo. Thank you, and over to you.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the fourth quarter and fiscal year 2017 earnings conference call. I have with me our President and Whole-Time Director, Aditya Ghosh, our Chief Financial Officer, Rohit Philip, our Chief Commercial Officer, Sanjay Kumar, and our Vice President of Finance, Vineet Mittal. Before we begin, please note that today's discussion may contain some statements on our business or financial, which will be construed as forward-looking. Our actual results may be materially different from these forward-looking statements. A transcript of today's call will also be archived on our website. The information provided on this call is as of today's date, and we undertake no obligation to update this information subsequently. With this, let me hand over the call to our President and Whole-Time Director, Aditya Ghosh.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on this call. By now, most of you should have seen our earnings press release. We will review our results in detail during the call, but I would like to start by taking a few minutes to update you on our exciting new development. We've just announced that we have signed a term sheet with ATR for the purchase of 50 ATR 72-600 aircraft with the flexibility to reduce the number of aircraft deliveries based on certain conditions. The term sheet is subject to reaching mutually satisfactory final purchase agreements with ATR and with the engine manufacturer. Assuming that the intended final purchase agreements are reached, we plan to launch our turboprop operation at the end of this year, 2017, and expect to induct up to 20 ATR aircraft by December 2018. However, under certain conditions, IndiGo may take deliveries of only a limited number of aircraft. Now, there are many unserved and underserved cities in India which require reliable air transportation, and our planned turboprop operation will cater to this growing demand. As you know, our Honorable Prime Minister, Shri Narendra Modi, has outlined a vision for increased connectivity to small towns and cities in India. He said, the new civil aviation policy marks an opportunity to cater to the aspirations of the people of India, and that the Udaan scheme is a key component of that policy. He also said that Tier 2, Tier 3 cities are becoming growth engines and enhanced aviation connectivity between them will be beneficial. At IndiGo, we're very much aligned with the Prime Minister Modi's vision on this issue. We should see increased business activity in these small towns and cities, which we expect will increase the demand for air travel in these regions. Now let me take a minute to speak to the structure of our planned turboprop operation. While it would be a part of IndiGo, we will have a focused division that will have the complete responsibility to run this operation, which will include many autonomous operating functions that will not overlap with our narrow-body operations. These operating groups would comprise of flight operations, in-flight services, dispatch and operations control, route planning, and revenue management. On the other hand, it will not manage activities such as human resources, finance, and legal, since these activities will be managed by the current IndiGo infrastructure that is already in place. The advantage of this overall structure is that it would avoid adding complexity to IndiGo's mainline operations, while at the same time, let most, if not all, administrative functions be handled by the existing IndiGo departments. Complexity comes about, for instance, from adding a Boeing 737 or a 757 into a narrow-body A320 mainline operation. And then we have to optimize the mainline network with different types of aircraft. In fact, when we run the numbers, the standalone ATR operation, while avoiding this complexity, will actually result in synergies in the corporate overhead and some operational activities such as ground handling. While we continue our discussions with the aircraft and engine manufacturers to finalize the aircraft and engine purchase agreements, we will immediately start putting together the necessary resources, both in terms of people and infrastructure, to be in a position to launch our operations later this year, in the hope that we shall be able to satisfactorily reach agreements with these two suppliers. Please note, however, that while we are very motivated to launch the turboprop operation, no assurances can be given that we will reach a final agreement on the purchase of these aircraft. Now coming to our earnings, we announced our fourth quarter and full year fiscal 2017 financial results today. We have reported a full year profit after tax of ₹16.6 billion, our ninth consecutive profitable year. For the fourth quarter, we reported a profit after tax of ₹4.4 billion with a profit margin of 9.1%. Compared to the same period last year, our profit after tax was lower, primarily due to an increase in fuel prices. Rohit will discuss our financials in more details a bit later. We added 5 aircraft during the quarter. All these planes were A320neos. With the addition of these planes, our overall fleet increased to 131 at the end of the quarter, out of which 19 were NEOs. Over the fiscal year 2018, we expect to add 39 airplanes, of which 28 would be NEOs. With these additions, we expect to end fiscal year 2018 with a fleet of 170 A320 aircraft, which is higher than what we had guided previously. We had announced opening of 6 new destinations in the previous call. We are pleased to report that we have already started operations to Doha, Sharjah, Mangalore, Madurai and Amritsar, and we will be starting operations to Dhaka soon. We were ranked number 1 in on-time performance in the month of March with an OTP of 88%. Usually at the end of the year, OTP takes a bit of a beating because of bad weather, and that is something that we anticipate. However, in the latter part of 2016, our own operations had to deal with the added complexity of increased passenger connections and crew swaps. This was one of the reasons that our OTP dipped in the third quarter. Once we identified the root causes, we put in a number of measures to improve our on-time performance. These include optimizing the schedule to reduce crew swaps and putting in place better processes to deal with connecting bags and passengers. As a result, we saw our on-time improve to 71.2% in January, 79.7% in February, and finally 88% in March. Also for the quarter, our technical dispatch reliability was 99.86% and the flight cancellation rate was 0.5%. Now let me spend some time to update you on the performance of the NEOs. The fuel performance of the NEOs continues to meet our targets and are giving us a fuel savings of about 15% compared to the A320 Classics. If you recall, from our previous call and consistent with what Pratt & Whitney had also mentioned, there were 2 significant operational concerns around the NEO engines. The first issue pertains to the combustor chamber. An improved combustor chamber is expected to be available in the fourth quarter of this calendar year. However, Pratt & Whitney is working on further design improvements which will be retrofitted on the engines later. The second concern was a number 3 bearing seal wear leading to a chip detected message. Pratt & Whitney has come up with an improvement package certified by industry regulators including FAA and EASA on the 12th of April. This includes necessary hardware and software changes. This change has now been carried out on all Indigo A320 aircraft engines. As per Pratt & Whitney, this should significantly alleviate the problem due to a number 3 carbon seal wear. In addition, new production engines and spare engines we receive will be equipped with a carbon seal improvement package. Pratt & Whitney will continue to work with us to ensure operational reliability. However, Pratt & Whitney is working on further design improvements which will be retrofitted on the engines later. Before I end, I have good news for all our shareholders too. As I mentioned earlier, we have reported yet another profitable year. Based on this, our board of directors has recommended a dividend of 34 rupees per share, subject to, of course, shareholders' approvals at the annual general meeting. With this, let me hand over the call to Rohit for an overview of our financials.
Thank you, Aditya, and good evening, everyone. As Aditya mentioned, we have reported yet another profitable year, our ninth consecutive year of profitability. For the full year, we reported a profit after tax of 16.6 billion rupees with a profit margin of 8.9% compared to a profit after tax of 19.9 billion rupees with a profit margin of 12.3% last year. Our EBITDA for the year was 54.4 billion rupees with an EBITDA margin of 29.3% compared to an EBITDA of 56.8 billion rupees with an EBITDA margin of 35.2% last year. We delivered an earnings per share of INR 45.94 for the full year. For the quarter ended March 2017, we reported a profit after tax of 4.4 billion rupees with a profit margin of 9.1% compared to a profit after tax of 5.8 billion rupees with a profit margin of 14.3% during the same period last year. We reported an EBITDA of 14.5 billion rupees with an EBITDA margin of 29.9% compared to an EBITDA of 15.5 billion rupees with an EBITDA margin of 37.9% during the same period last year. Our profitability in the quarter was lower than the same period last year, primarily due to higher fuel prices we had this year. Our total capacity for the March quarter was 14.1 billion ASKs, an increase of 24.2% compared to the same period last year. Our revenue from operations in the March quarter was 48.5 billion rupees, an increase of 18.5% over the same period last year. Our ticket revenue was 42.6 billion rupees, and our ancillary revenue was 5.5 billion rupees, an increase of 20.5% and 3.1% respectively compared to the same period last year. Our other income was 2.9 billion rupees for the quarter. Our RASK for the quarter was 3.52 rupees, down 3.3% from 3.64 rupees during the same quarter last year. The decline in RASK was driven by a 4.2% decline in yield, which was partially offset by a 1 point increase in load factors. While the yields were down 10% in the month of January, there was an improvement in year-over-year yield trends in the months of February and March, as the industry was partially able to pass on the increased fuel cost to consumers. Our CASK was higher by 5.5% from 2.92 rupees for the quarter ended March 2016 to 3.08 rupees for the quarter ended March 2017, driven by an increase in fuel prices of 38.3%. Our CASK excluding fuel improved by 8.9% from 2.02 rupees to 1.84 rupees in the quarter, driven by a continued focus on cost performance. We also had total debt of 26 billion rupees on March 31st, 2017. Our cash balance at the end of March was 93.4 billion rupees, comprising of 44.3 billion rupees of free cash and 49.1 billion rupees of restricted cash. based on the cash position and the overall profitability for the year, as Aditya mentioned earlier, the board of directors of the company have recommended a dividend of 34 rupees per share for fiscal 2017. Let me end by giving you our expectation of fleet and capacity. We expect to end the current financial year with a fleet of 170 A320 aircraft, including 47 NEOs. The year-over-year capacity increase is expected to be 28% for 25%, sorry, for fiscal 2018. This excludes the planned ATR operation. For the first quarter of fiscal 2018, the year-over-year capacity increase is expected to be 22%. With this, let me hand the call back to Ankur.
Thank you, Aditya and Rohit. To answer as many questions as possible, I would like to request that each participant limit themselves to one question and one brief follow-up question if needed. And with that, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handset while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, please press star and one at this time. The first question is from the line of Rakesh Jhunjhunwala from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Good evening, friends. My first question is that today with oil being...
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Jhunjhunwala.
Yeah.
Can you take the phone off speaker, sir, because it's causing disturbance?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Please proceed. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, with the oil being at $50 and the rupee being at 65, what is the parity price for the oil today, for the fuel oil today? For the aviation fuel? Hello?
Yes, Mr. Jhunjhunwala. It's Rohit. I guess I didn't fully understand the question.
You know, after all, the aviation fuel price is dependent on the international oil price and the value of the rupee against the dollar. So I feel that although the oil price have gone down and the rupee has gained, the government has not commensurately reduce the price of aviation fuel.
That is true.
So what is the, one question is, what would be the parity price? Second thing is, how are the yields in April? And how do you anticipate the yields for the quarter and the year?
So let me take the first question. The, on the, on respect to the fuel prices, clearly, by the time you take the international oil prices and jet international jet fuel prices, and then you take it into sort of the Indian prices that typically are set by Indian oil companies. There's a little bit of opaqueness in how that price gets translated. It doesn't get translated real time because it gets set every month. So yes, we would hope that we would be able to get these. The reduction in prices effective in the Indian aviation turbine fuel prices shortly, but there is a little bit of a lag and a little bit of lack of transparency how that process works, unfortunately.
No, but what is the difference, you think? Because you must be having a table where you calculate it. No?
Rakeshji, this is Aditya.
Yeah.
There is actually a lot of opacity in how the price of ATF is charged to Indian operators versus what is happening in the international market.
Right.
And in fact, this is a very public news that airlines for many years have been actually trying to work with the government to try and bring about more transparency in this pricing mechanism.
So you have no idea that what will happen?
We get to know when the price is determined at the beginning of the month.
But there is some linkage with the international price in the dollar. No?
Absolutely. I mean, it's based on the factors of the international fuel prices, the dollar prices, and then ultimately there's a little bit of a black box that ultimately ends up sort of translating it into the price here.
No, but the price should decline by 5%, 10%. I mean, I understand the opaqueness, but you have an idea, no? Not even in terms of what government will do, but what the fair price is. Suppose last time when they set the price at the, you know, oil was 55 and the rupee was 67. So today it's 50, so they should go down by 10%. No.
Yeah, absolutely correct, theoretically.
That's what I'm asking you. So theoretically what should be, whether they do it or not, we don't know.
Theoretically I'm sorry, I don't have that calculation for you right now. We can maybe follow up with you offline with that calculation.
And second question is, how are the yields in April? And how do you see the yields going ahead?
So let me try to answer that question and then Aditya can chime in. We typically do not give forward-looking looking guidance on yields. We don't...
April is gone, no?
Right. We stay away from giving guidance on yields.
No, I'm not asking for guidance, sir. Okay, you don't give me guidance, but I'm asking for April, which is a pass which already happened. And if you don't want to give your yields, you can give us some idea how the industry yields have failed.
So, Rakeshji, there have been improvements in the yields, particularly in the month of February and March.
Right.
And things are better. But there is still some distance to cover before we see truly rational pricing environment. But other than that...
If you don't want to say, I'm asking you how yields have fared in April.
Yes, but because April is part of this current quarter, we will not comment on this current quarter till the time that the quarter is over.
I understand. You're giving a public statement. The time is out. I mean, the period is over. Okay, don't concern your yields. There's some idea of industry yields. Yeah.
So I've already commented on it.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amy Truesdale from Jupiter Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one. Do you have a dividend policy? And if so, is there a set payout ratio outlined in that policy?
So what we've said on our dividend, on the dividend policy, which we said on the last couple of earnings calls, is that our board of directors annually will look at the profit after tax that has been generated for the year. We'll look at the cash balance available, and we'll look at uses of cash that the board anticipates the business will need, and based on that, make a decision annually. We do not have any sort of target payout ratio. So based on the factors that that our board looked at this year, we recommended a dividend of 34%, but it's not based on any, of 34 rupees per share, but it's not based on any target payout ratio.
Okay, and there's sort of no plans to review, sort of put in place a dividend policy or review that in any way?
This is our dividend policy. It, as you probably know, in the airline industry, it's not very common for airlines to pay an annual dividend or to pay dividends at all. So we likewise are not don't think we're in a well position to be able to guide on a particular payout ratio. Having said that, we'll look at the situation annually and make our decision, as we said.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Ashutosh Somani from JM. Just had a quick question on when we say that the yields were better in the month of February and March, how do you juxtapose it along with the PAX growth being slower in the months of, especially in the month of March? Do you think, the higher yields have sort of percolated to lower PAX growth? That's one. The other thing is if you can give some sense of, what is the sort of scale we need in the ATR new aircraft that we have ordered to, EBITDA could break even. So what is the operational dynamics or economics of the ATR aircraft that we have ordered, especially in terms of fuel efficiency? Thanks.
So, you know, as far as the growth in traffic is concerned, year over year, traffic growth in March was 14% compared to the capacity growth of 16%. Now, in several prior months, the traffic growth was in excess of 20%. Capacity growth was also in excess of 20%. So it's kind of tracking. It's not that there is a significant difference. And yields were down in excess of 10% throughout the year up to January 2017 due to the prevailing market dynamics. In February and March, we've seen an improvement in the yields across the industry. This also reflects that we've been able to partially pass on some of the increased fuel cost. On the ATR, maybe Rohit can comment.
Yeah, on the ATR, it's too early to give guidance on specific sort of numbers in terms of break evens and those kind of metrics. Obviously, when we looked at the economics of the turboprop alternatives out there, certainly the ATR aircraft has a slightly lower fuel burn than one of the other competitive products. There's a lot of factors that go ultimately into the economics of the operation. And ultimately, the key is to run an operation that will have the right cost structure overall for the markets that it serves in, and ultimately look at a RASK minus CASK spread that we'll be looking to optimize.
Absolutely. Can you just share the specific ratio in terms of fuel consumption, liter per kilometer, however you state it? Can you just give the specifics of this particular aircraft that we have ordered?
Look, Anitin, this is Aditya. While we are not in a position to discuss, all the details that went into the decision-making process,
mm-hmm.
And also obviously some of it is somewhat confidential between the manufacturer and us. Look, both ATR and the Q400 aircraft manufacturers make great products. And the Q400, which is operated by one of our competitors, has proven to be successful in India.
Sure.
Having said that, for us, the ATR was the right product. And then, as Rohit explained, it is not just the cost side of it, but then you see, look at the revenue side of it, and the spread of it is what will finally determine whether the operation is feasible or not.
Sure. Thank you for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Rampuria from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Mr. Rampuria, please proceed with your question.
Yeah, so I've got some question to ask. One is that this incentive income in this quarter has not changed much, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, despite the adding five new A320 NEOs. Can you explain why?
Yes, I think there's many factors that go into that line item. You get additions to that balance sheet line item with addition of aircraft. You also have some certain aircraft where the lease period where the incentives are being amortized expire. So there's sort of a netting of all those factors that go in, and so that's why for this quarter that number hasn't moved very much.
And the other income in this quarter was very high. Can you explain how much is the yield on your cash?
Yeah, I think I need to take a minute to explain other income.
Yeah.
Items that I've been guiding on the Q&As of the last few quarters is the mark-to-market gain we take on the foreign exchange, gain or loss. And in this quarter, the rupee strengthened by 3 rupees. So we had a mark-to-market gain. There was a net gain for the year that was booked in the other income line, and that number was 826 million rupees. So that explains part of the increase in the other income line. The rest is based on interest earnings in cash. So while the cash balance has gone up, interest earnings on the cash actually on a year over year basis are actually lower this year, as you probably can expect. So
there's about a 2 to 3 point reduction in your interest interest rate on the that you're earning your interest income on, but that's offset by this 826 million gain net gain on foreign exchange that offsets that.
So one last question to ask you, basically this and the addition of on the fleet side for FY18, can you explain this change in strategy? You know, because earlier it was supposed to be around 154, now you're guiding up for 170 aircrafts. Can you explain what's happening on this side?
So as we mentioned on the last call that we had previously guided 154 aircraft for fiscal 2018, but what we said is we'd update that guidance on this call, and we also indicated on the last quarter call that we expect that number to be higher than the 154 that we'd previously guided. So as we've sort of worked through our full business plan and what sort of the specifics that we're planning to launch, the number that we've just talked about of 170 aircraft is our plan.
So 11 extra, so basically your 11 would be non-A320 neos. Is it that it's a short-term lease, or can you just explain the what basically it's a short-term lease or it's a like long-term lease?
Yeah. So in addition to the 28 neos, the remaining aircraft will likely be on shorter term leases. They'll likely be used A320s on shorter term leases, similar to what we did over the course of fiscal 17.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Krishnan from Kotak Infina. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, good evening. Just wanted to understand the shift in strategy from one type of aircraft company to now actually introducing ATRs, especially when our business model used to always have advantages on the cost front because of the same. So just wanted to understand the shift in strategy.
Sure, this is Rohit. I'll attempt to answer that. You know, I think Aditya talked a little bit about it earlier on the call.
Right.
And as he described, you know, complexity really comes about when you add, you know, like a Boeing 737 or Boeing 757 into your mainline A320 operation. So when you do that, you're trying to optimize the mainline network with different types of aircraft. That creates sort of complexity of trying to manage multiple fleet types. And if you just look at what drives that complexity and that cost in sort of full-service airlines who have multiple fleet types, there's a few main issues. Probably the biggest one is pilot training costs. So if you have a mainline fleet type where you have one set of pilots, then when they get a promotion, they want to move from the left seat of they want to move from a first officer of an A320 into a captain of another fleet type. And you have to keep training, and the recurring training costs sort of create a lot of cost and complexity. So that's sort of one element.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because you don't have now the flexibility of have that pilot pool to be able to be scheduled across all aircraft, you have to have separate pilot pools for each aircraft type, which creates again your ability. You have to have more reserves. You have to have more more sort of inefficiencies in the system. The other sort of things are when you try to schedule planes, if you have a route network where you're scheduling sort of multiple types of fleets on the same routes,
mm-hmm.
you might have one flight between Delhi and Bombay doing one with a 737, one with a 757. If there's some kind of IROPS or you need some flexibility to swap aircraft, now you have a different aircraft, you don't have the right crew available, you don't have a lot of those type of things, so you have to add in a lot of buffers for those kind of things.
Mm.
So those are sort of what historically, and you know, I've had a fair amount of experience living through complexity in my prior experiences at United Airlines, that these are the kinds of things that drive complexity. So as we look at this operation, we absolutely want to avoid that. We will keep the operations and the operations of those aspects of this business completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
We'll still obviously
capture all the synergies of not needing a different HR and finance and all the administrative functions, but the operational aspects which add complexity, we will contain to separate operations, which will allow us not to let complexity creep into either of the two operations.
All right, best of luck. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gupta from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my question. Just to understand a couple of data-related questions. First was, again, on the mark-to-market FX gains, you mentioned that, so all the FX gains have gone in other income, or are there any FX gains in other expenses? Because I think some of them go into other expenses as well.
Yes. So let me complete that explanation. So mark-to-market, the full mark-to-market explanation is that there was a reversal of prior gains recorded in other expenses, and the net gain over and above what the reversal of in other expenses was booked in other income, which was the 826 million that I talked about in other income. In other expenses, there was a reversal of 796 million rupees of prior mark-to-market losses that were reversed in the other expense line. So there's a benefit of 796 million rupees in other expenses and a benefit of 826 million rupees in other income.
Right, that's very helpful. And just on, again, on the FX side, because the currency is appreciating, so, and a lot of your costs are dollar-linked, like, again, these lease rentals, et cetera. So so benefit on the balance sheet side, how do you take that? I mean, does that directly go to equity, or how does that work?
So we've got a fair number of foreign exchange liabilities on our balance sheet, and as we publish the full details of the balance sheet as part of our annual report later this year for March 31, the total foreign exchange liabilities have grown to over $500 million. So what that does is now a 1 rupee appreciation would result in about a 50 crore benefit and vice versa. That would be the balance sheet and a mark-to-market unrealized gain or loss on the liabilities. Obviously, on our existing business, we've got fuel prices, which while it's ultimately rupee denominated, it is exposed to the fluctuations of the dollar, as you know. In the rest of the expenses, you have sort of your aircraft and engine rentals line, which is primarily foreign exchange denominated. So that exposure we do have in the P&L in addition to the liability on the balance sheet.
Right. Sorry. Join just on, because shouldn't it flow through the other comprehensive income? You see some significant gains on that flowing through other comprehensive income? Just trying to
we can explain the the answer to that question is no, but we cannot explain that offline in terms of explain to you how our accounting policy sort of works, but the answer to that is no, it flows through the P&L.
Thanks, I'll join back the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kevin Mehta from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Joseph from IIFL. Thank you for the opportunity. I have three questions. One is, when you refer to the potential ATR operations, would it be right to assume that these ATRs would operate on routes which are completely exclusive of your current mainline operations? Or will there be any overlap?
So, it's probably too early to comment on the details of our, route planning for the moment. We will reveal our launch routes and our route plan network in some time as we go ahead. But we do see a tremendous amount of growth opportunity in Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities. And we think that there are many such opportunities to deploy these trains profitably.
Okay. The second question I had was for Rohit. Rohit, the numbers that you gave out, the MTM gain of 826 million and the reversal in other expenses of 796 million, are these for 4Q or are these for the full year FY17?
These are the numbers that we booked in 4Q. So the, for the full year, effectively what happens is the net gain that was booked in other income for the quarter, the 826, is effectively the full year mark-to-market gain.
All right. Okay. I got it then. And the last question that I had was your view on the industry capacity increase in the industry in FY18. And, you know, when I think about it, Indigo, which has a 40% market share, would add, you know, maybe 25% to the ASKM if I include the ATRs. So Indigo by itself is adding about 10% to the industry capacity. And I guess there would be, you know, small additions from the other players as well. So when you think about it in that light, do you see a scenario where industry capacity next year would, I mean FY18 would actually be increasing at a much higher rate compared to the passenger growth, especially when, you know, in the last couple of months we have seen some moderation in pass growth?
So, you know, this question keeps coming up periodically, and the way we see it is that this is a country which has, you know, which is highly underpenetrated. This is a country that needs more air connectivity and more air travel. There, when you're building a long-term business, there is sometime a lag between capacity and passenger growth. You know, if there was some slowdown of passenger growth in the last few months, that's also one of the slowest, weaker parts of the year. Now we are heading into summers, load factors are up. So we just generally believe as Indigo in the long-term opportunity and the opportunity that India presents.
But and this is Rohit, I would just add that, you know, the demand over the last couple of months, while sort of the March number was not the 20% year-over-year that you were used to seeing, capacity growth in March over the previous March was only 16%. So obviously, the demand growth can't grow if the capacity doesn't grow in that particular month. And that's because I think a year ago in March, you saw a big increase in year-over-year capacity that wasn't there the previous month. So I think looking at that 20% number and suddenly seeing that lower is not necessarily a reflection of demand slowing down. Well, obviously, we'll all have to see how demand continues in the short and long term. But I wouldn't look too much at that March number or something that's pointing out any trend.
All right, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anshuman Deb from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to have a brief understanding of the fares. Like in the last con call, we said that the January fares were near about 10% decline, 11% decline YOY. So this quarter we have an aggregate decline of around 6%. So that would mean a kind of a positive fare growth in February and March. Is that a right understanding?
So firstly, for the quarter, the yields were down 4%, 4.2% for the quarter. So there was clearly an improvement from the negative 10 in January in February and March. So the overall yields for the quarter were 4.2.
Right. And my second question is regarding the upcoming capacity. Would you share any details about the deployment strategy of this capacity? Are you making any kind of emphasis on any location, maybe tier one or any metros or region wise, north, east, west, south, any kind of space? Would you be sharing that?
No, our growth is quite secular.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saurabh Kumar from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. So my first question is essentially on your rental costs. So are these rentals fixed in nature or floating and variable rates in nature?
They're primarily all the primarily fixed in nature.
And fixed for what? The entire term of the lease or?
Yes, their operating leases are typically on a fixed rate basis.
Okay, sir. And this on this ATRs, so you are purchasing these aircraft, right? There is no, I mean, there's no leasing and all involved in this. So this is on your balance sheet now.
It's I think Saurabh, we have a number of options available to us in terms of how we want to finance these aircraft. You can do ECA financing. You can do leases. You can do bank debt. You can. We may even choose to buy them with free cash. So there's many options available. So it's too early to comment on what options we'll choose.
Okay, fair point. And sir, if you can just help me with your landing charges for this quarter, what will that number be?
It's not shared separately. It's part of other expenses.
Yeah. Okay. So you should. I mean, you used to give this earlier, so.
Yeah, I don't have that for you.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manjeet Buaria from Solidarity Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for taking my question. Sir, I wanted to understand, how does one think about the tax rates for your company? I would have presumed that your core operations would be fully tax operations. So, you know, are there any benefits which you get?
There's several line items that go into the calculation for the tax rate that might be different from how the P&L is calculated. When you look at sort of cash and non-cash items in particular, and so when you look at that, you know, we expected. Obviously, the other, you know, other factors include sort of aircraft depreciation, where the tax depreciation is different than book depreciation. So when you look at that, and then you ultimately express an effective tax rate as a percentage of your book profits, it's going to be different from what your statutory tax rate would be. So I think, was that your question about why is it different?
Yeah, so I just wanted to understand, you know, we don't pay MAT as of now, right?
We don't pay MAT right now, that's right.
Yeah, so no, I just wanted to get a sense, you know, like over time, is this tax rate supposed to be in this 20 to 24% bucket based on the depreciation, etc. you mentioned, or it keeps moving more than that? So I just wanted to get a sense of how to think about the tax rate over a longer period of
time. Okay, fair enough. Now I got your questions. Sorry. So we expect our tax rate to be in the range of 28 to 30% of going into fiscal 2018. That is what we had originally expected for fiscal 2017 as well. And through the year, on earlier calls, I had sort of guided down the 20 to 24 just for this year, because earlier on in the year, we had taken some MAT write-backs, and I'd given the details of that on Q1 and Q2, that we had taken some MAT write-backs that helped us, that made this effective tax rate number lower for this year. But going forward, we expect to be in the 28 to 30% effective tax rate.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayur Milak from India Nivesh. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just had a couple of questions. One on the capacity additions. So while we've been saying that, just wanted to understand, do we really consider the softening of yields as a reason of the industry capacity addition? So if we are really going to exceed the capacity addition way above the demand, that would mean that the fixed cost related to that capacity will definitely come into the books. But at the same time, we are not really seeing that excessive demand coming. And further, the other guys also adding capacity. Wouldn't that really, add pressure on the yields, and the yields would continue to be soft going forward as well?
You know,
the way we look at it is, in the past several months, traffic growth was in excess of 20%. Capacity growth was also in excess of 20%.
Yeah, that's right. So we've not seen yields improving because they were both hand in hand. And now that if we expect that the capacity will be higher, wouldn't that really add more pressure to the yields as well?
We actually do see yields improving, as I pointed out. And the other is also that as we look at capacity growth over the next 1 year, we absolutely expect traffic to also grow.
All right. Secondly, just about the clarification on the Forex. So we've been saying that the M2M gain is a non-cash item, right? It's more of a bookish entry of 826 million on the other income. And similarly, a reversal of 796 would be a non-cash reversal in expenses.
Right.
So doesn't that mean that the entire PAT that is reported right now seems to be bloated by almost 160 odd crores because of this adjustment?
And it would, I wouldn't characterize it that way. There's a reason why the rules of financial reporting are the way they are. This was sort of in the other direction the last couple of quarters, and in this quarter it's in this direction. But that's why I've given the full disclosure so investors can look at our numbers and understand them. Fully.
Right. And just one last on the ATR. So I'm presuming that since you mentioned in the opening note that this was more to do with the Udaan scheme, so this will be more for the regional connectivity. And you mentioned that you will try and keep the operations separate from your mainline operations. Now, would this mean that so far we've not seen you bidding for the newer routes? So once you are more closer to the finalizing of the ATR, you start bidding on the regional routes as well?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Parita Asher from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. Congratulations on the sharp upgrade in fleet guidance. Now, as I understand that India is underpenetrated and we have been growing at a 20% plus for the last 2 years, we're yet to see a year when we have a 20% plus capacity and demand growth without any cuts to yields. Now, given there is limited scope for further decline in yields at the cost of margins, if tomorrow IndiGo was to make a choice of further cuts to, say, either maintaining load factors or cutting down on fleet guidance, how would the management think about it, and what's your thought on that?
So this is Rohit. I'll start by saying, you know, we have our fleet plan that we've put together with a fair amount of thought in terms of where we think we'll deploy this capacity. We expect to follow through on our fleet plan.
Mm-hmm.
When you know as we look at sort of the demand environment. In the short term, what you have to do is you have to optimize your RASK, which is a combination of yield and load factor, and that's sort of a normal function that an airline will do. So you can't really look at load factor versus anything else. You're just optimizing yield, optimizing sort of RASK, which is a combination of yield and load factor. And our capacity plan we're pretty comfortable with. Over the next year.
Does that answer the question, Tarita?
My question particularly was if we see demand growth being significantly lower, say the numbers that we saw for March 2 continued for some more time, and we see a pressure in terms of load factors, clearly demand being lower than capacity. In the event that happens, would we consider lowering the fleet guidance, or that is something that is more structural and that's something we will live with in the short term?
This is Aditya. So, you know, we are not fixated on load factor in isolation. We are looking at running a profitable airline. Now, we will look at optimizing RASK, but at the end of the day, we're also focused on the other very important part of the equation, which is making sure that we are the lowest cost producer of the seat in the country, and possibly one of the lowest cost producers of the seat in the world. And as long as that RASK minus CASK spread is what we are focused on, yes, load factor is one of the elements, but that is not, load factor is not what is driving the capacity guidance.
And I'll just add on this March data point, year over year, the capacity for March was only up 16%.
Yes, I understand that. All right, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohanlal from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question and congratulations on a very good performance in a tough quarter. You just now remarked that you see yield improving going forward. And also just want to understand a bit more, what do you think has changed for the industry in the last 3 months? Feb and March, yield movement is positive and outlook is also improving versus what we communicated at the end of the third quarter. If you could explain a bit more on what is changing in terms of the behavior of the participants.
So Mohanlal, it's Rohit. I think, firstly, just to clarify, we didn't make a comment on sort of yields going forward. It was only about sort of the trend in the quarter, from the beginning of the quarter towards the end of the quarter, and certainly things were improving in February and March, and they were sequentially improving. I think a little bit of that had to do with the close-in bookings. The fares with close-in bookings were higher, and we didn't have as many low fares available sort of in the last week of travel that you had probably the last couple quarters. So you saw a little bit of that that sort of probably being the primary driver of the yield improvement in February and March. Certainly, fuel prices increased a fair amount, so there was certainly a fair amount of impetus from the industry overall to sort of recover some of that increased cost through fares, and that's what you saw in February and March. We're hopeful that this trend will continue, but we won't give any guidance at this point in terms of yields.
Sir, just one question here. You said the low fare bucket was less in the last 2 months. That trend continues in April and May as well. Can you comment on that?
No, Mohanlal. We unfortunately will not comment on April or May. All I'm saying is that yes, there was a better fares in the last week of travel in February and March than there had been sort of the prior quarters.
Thanks so much for this.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ankur Goel for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you all for joining us on this call. Just to reiterate, a recording of this call will be made available on our website shortly, followed by a written transcript. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IndiGo, that concludes this conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.